this podcast was inspired by my work as a physical therapist in a neurologic-based rehabilitation clinic. Each and every day, I have the opportunity to use the expertise that I've gained through my training to guide my clients and their loved ones on a journey that can sometimes be fraught with uncertainty and emotions. Although I am a true believer that the work we do as PTs is incredibly important and essential, I have come to recognize that the best way to approach patient care is through a team approach. I've been faced many times with questions I don't yet know the answers to, or the realization that another type of specialist may be just what we need to burst through that plateau. I've witnessed how invaluable it is for the individuals I work with to feel supported and to meet others who have been through similar experiences. Because no matter how much compassion and empathy I bring to our interactions, I will never claim to truly understand what it is like to walk in a pair of shoes I've never even tried on before. So this project has an ambitious aim: to increase access to knowledge and information about rehabilitation and resources for optimizing quality of life for persons living with a neuromuscular and neurologic disorder or injury, to reach clinicians who want to learn more about the breadth of resources available to support the whole person that they're serving, and to provide a platform for storytelling and sharing as a way to remind each and every one of us that though we may not see ourselves in any or many of the people surrounding us, there's always someone out there who can relate. I'm excited to have you along on this journey as we cultivate and curate the content of this podcast and reach out to people around the country and the world who will hopefully find this information just when they need it the most. Hello, everyone. I have with me today nearly 10-year-old Bridget and her mom, Jamie, from Arizona. So Jamie currently works as a major gift advisor for ALSAC, which stands for American Lebanese Syrian Associated Charities for St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital in Tennessee. So ALSAC is responsible for raising 80% of the funds necessary to operate St. Jude's, where they are leading the world in understanding and treating childhood cancers and other life-threatening diseases. And because of their generous donors, families never receive a bill from St. Jude's. So Jamie, Bridget, and her family are one of those generous donors. For many years, Jamie used her love of indoor cycling and fitness instruction to raise money for St. Jude's and even got a chance to visit the Memphis, Tennessee establishment. But Jamie never imagined she would return to the hospital as the mother of a patient looking for a cure after her daughter Bridget was diagnosed with osteosarcoma, a cancer of the bone. So welcome, Jamie and Bridget. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Good. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Of course. We are here on a Friday afternoon after Bridget has, and I'm sure Jamie, have already had a long day. So they're generous to share a little bit of time with us. So thank you guys for being here. I'd love to have you share a little bit about your story. I'm a follower of your Instagram page, Bridget, and I've been watching all the hard work you've been putting in towards your rehab and the sports that you play, and hopefully you're finding some time for fun in between all of that. And before I ask you to share a little bit about how you were diagnosed, I'd love to hear about all the things that you were involved in before your diagnosis, if you were playing sports or doing activities, the kinds of things that you love to do.
I played soccer. Sometimes on occasions I would putt at golf occasionally.
Played softball
and I did gymnastics when I was like 2 years old.
That was a long time ago. Yeah. But you played softball and soccer, and every once in a while you would putt. That's right.
Yeah. So it sounds like you were pretty active. You sounds like you were more active than I was as a kid. I wasn't a very good soccer player. So you definitely have me there, but that all sounds really fun. So what were the first signs or symptoms that something was maybe going on?
Well, I was at soccer.
Practice,
and I got kicked in between my shin guard and a cleat, and it's very small. And
you were six, so that's a really small place.
And then it was like on Saturday, that was Tuesday, on Saturday we had a soccer game. And I wasn't running normally. And then my grandma was here, and she went to go tie my shoe and squeezed my ankle, and it hurt. So then my mom took me to the doctor. And a couple of days later, we found out I had cancer.
That's the abbreviated version. Yes. Yeah. So Bridget was, she was playing soccer, and in practice, you know, a really small place between your shin guard and your cleat when you're just 6 years old. And she came running over to the sideline and screaming in pain. And I thought, boy, that was a bit dramatic for just being kicked, you know. And she went back in and played. And then, like she said, in that game on Saturday, she was galloping. She wasn't running normally. And I knew something was wrong. And she told me it still hurt. The next day, my mom tried to grab her ankle to tie her shoelace to go to church, and she screamed, and it's that same small spot. So we went to the doctor on Monday, the pediatrician, and she said that her, the area that where she was kicked, her tibia, and that shouldn't just break being kicked, but it was definitely swollen. So she sent us for an x-ray. So the next day we had an x-ray. They called us the following day and said something looked abnormal on the x-ray and sent us to a specialist on that Wednesday. Thursday,
we gotta say something.
Oh, yes.
When we were at the game the next week on Saturday, the girl wasn't there who kicked me in the shin because she moved up to a higher level.
Oh, man. So you didn't even get to talk to her about it.
No, but why are we thankful for her?
Because otherwise my cancer would have spread.
Yeah, we maybe would not have known. If she hadn't kicked you, maybe we wouldn't have found it so quickly and your cancer could have spread.
But that doesn't mean if you kick someone that you go up to a higher level.
True. True, right. I don't know if that's why she went to a higher level, but nonetheless, we're grateful for her, right?
Sometimes we never know when those things that seem like bad things can turn out to be just the thing we need, right?
Yeah, we were so grateful. And so they had saw something that was abnormal on the x-ray, and they sent us for an MRI that Friday. Tuesday, we wound up in a bone specialist, and she told us it was either cancer or a bone infection. And we were praying that it was a bone infection. They sent off the sample after the biopsy on Wednesday. And that Friday, I got the worst phone call a parent could ever receive. And they said that, you know, what we were hoping for, a bone infection, it was not. It was osteosarcoma. It was very, very, very quick, though, for a bone cancer diagnosis. Typically, it's looked at as growing pains or, an injury, just aches and pains, and it's passed off. And we're very grateful that the person reading her x-ray picked up on that. And was caught very quickly, and also grateful for that little girl that kicked you and fractured your tibia.
Yeah. I'm not.
maybe one day you'll see that way, but I can understand how you're feeling about that too. It's no fun to get kicked, especially when it hurts that badly. So that, I mean, I can only imagine that must have been extremely overwhelming news. Bridget, when you found out about it, did you have a lot of questions about what was going on and what was happening? And did you feel like, you know, you were able to get those answers?
But so there was one, and I really didn't want that one to happen, and it was losing my hair.
Yeah, so I came home. I was at work when I was on my way home from work when I got that phone call, and Bridget was on the couch recovering from her bone biopsy. And I came into the house and I got down on my knees next to the couch where she was laying. And I looked at her and I said that it was not a bone infection and it was unfortunately cancer. And she started to cry. And I told her that she was strong and she was a fighter and she was going to kick cancer in the butt and that she was going to be okay.
Yeah, you said the other word, by the way.
Yes, you call me out on that every time, but I will say it was okay for us to say you were going to kick cancer in the
ass.
Yes, you can beep that out, because it was going to be a tough battle, and it was okay to curse, and I knew it was going to be scary, but I knew you were so strong and that we were going to make it through it, and you did ask me some questions. You knew what cancer was because we raised money for St. Jude and for your friends like your friend Lily who had a brain tumor, mm-hmm. and for all of those kids that you knew what cancer was, but you asked me what?
was I going to lose my hair?
Yeah. Were you going to lose your hair?
I don't remember the other question.
I remember the other question. You don't think that's what you asked, but you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, I think she asked me if she was going to die.
I never said that. Okay. Did I?
I think so, but you don't remember it that way. And that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. That's really big news to handle at any age, Bridget. It doesn't matter if you're 6 or 16 or 60, you know, all those thoughts go through everyone's head, I think. And it's, you know, normal to have fears. And even though, as your mom said, she knew you were crazy strong and, you know, as a team, you guys were going to have what it takes to get through it. It's still, you know, there's a lot to process when it first happens, a lot of unknowns. So Jamie, did you know immediately that St. Jude's was the hospital that you were going to take her to for her care?
So just as you had mentioned, and I just briefly mentioned now, we were fundraisers for the hospital over the last several years. And I had just been there 7 months before, so I knew the hospital. I knew the work that they were doing. I didn't know if it was even an option for us. So I went online and I applied. There's an application online and I applied for it. And within 24 hours, I received word that we would be accepted pending the doctor, the local oncologist, the person who diagnosed Bridget's information, that we would be accepted, that they were treating Bridget's cancer at the time. But that was a big decision, you know. I mean, do I pick up Bridget and our lives and move halfway across the country? And I had an 11-year-old son and a husband and a job, and Bridget had her soccer team and her friends and her family and everybody here. But when I was there and I saw the work that was being done at the hospital and the care that was given, not to mention that I would never have to worry about receiving a bill or knowing that her care was the first and primary goal, regardless of what insurance would cover, that was obviously very appealing. But I wanted to go to a place where I knew that Bridget had the best chance for survival. And so my husband and I thought long and hard about it. And after that application and the acceptance, 9 days after her diagnosis, we arrived at the hospital for Bridget's treatment.
Wow. So that's pretty quick to be able to organize that. And you make a good point that, you know, when something like, you know, it's lucky in some ways that you had a relationship with St. Jude's and you knew that it exists, you understood the great work that they're doing. But I think for so many individuals and families, when, you know, a big new kind of scary diagnosis gets set down on the table, a lot of people are just starting with, I don't even know where to start. And maybe you only have the information that one doctor is providing and not even sure how to navigate the many resources that are out there and how to gather information. And I think that can be a big barrier for some people to finding the best care, is not even knowing where to start or who to turn to. So I'm glad you guys had some good resources and that it was, you know, ultimately, it sounds like leaving the local support network was a big decision that you had to consider, but it sounds like St. Jude's was ultimately the best place to go.
Yeah, you know, one of the other, Bridget, as I mentioned initially, when we were raising money for St. Jude, Bridget had a friend who had a brain tumor. Her name's Lily, and we raised money in her name, and Bridget had been friends with her since they were three. And never thinking that, you know, Bridget in turn would be diagnosed, but her mom was a great support for me. She had been navigating the world of pediatric cancer for years at that point, and she helped me not only understand what was, you know, obviously being told to me about Bridget's diagnosis, but she helped me reach out to different institutions across the United States for second opinions. I didn't even know that I should do that. I had no idea. So not only then did I have Bridget's diagnosis, but I was reaching out for second opinions with her help. And then I was also, obviously, I applied to St. Jude, who then became my second opinion after we arrived, because all of her scans and port placement was done immediately here in Phoenix. But when we arrived at St. Jude, they repeated all of her scans themselves so that they could use their equipment their radiologist and have their baseline to start with. So that every scan and every follow-up would be based off of their baseline. So it would be very consistent. So yeah, I mean, I didn't know all of the waters to navigate. I didn't know how to do anything. And not only that, but you hear those, the worst words of your life, your child has cancer and you can't even breathe. You can't sleep. You can't eat. You don't even know how to function. And yet you're supposed to be figuring out where to take your child and what are your best options and all of those different things together. And so I feel so blessed that we had just been at St. Jude and I knew about the possibility of being a patient there, and it literally was life-changing for us in so many ways.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a good just example of how being able, how the immense pressure of, you know, you have this personal event going on and the stress and fear and overwhelm, all of that. And then on top of it, suddenly you need a medical degree in order to understand what the best care could be for your daughter and how to navigate that. So I'm glad you were able to find some resources. And I hope that, you know, as we move forward in healthcare, that more and more avenues for people to access in these kinds of situations start to appear so that nobody feels alone and they know where to turn to. And there's somebody out there that can be that initial resource, at least to guide them in the right way. And it sounds like some of the work that you guys are doing through social media and other things like that, I mean, even that isn't such an amazing resource for someone to see, here's someone going through something I'm going through, and maybe this is a jumping off point for understanding my next step.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we started Bridget's Instagram right around her amputation, and we were so touched by other people's stories that were being shared, and it was just our way of connecting the dots in a sense. And it's turned out that Bridget's been able to share her journey and be an inspiration for so many other people, but in turn it's been a way for us to be able to connect with people that have gone through similar situations or even something that's totally different, but still inspires Bridget every day, myself every day. And it's been a blessing for us.
Yeah, that's the absolute best side of social media right there. That's for sure. So can I ask you guys a little bit about kind of what it was like and what went through your mind when amputation was proposed as kind of the best option for curing the cancer?
It was scary.
Yeah.
Do you remember when you found out?
I cried, maybe. Did I?
We were in Dr. Neal's office.
Did I cry?
Yeah. You got angry and you cried. And you said you thought that mommy and daddy knew and that we didn't tell you. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But we didn't know yet. We found out when you found out. But who did you meet that day?
Brenna Huckabee.
Brenna Huckabee. Did she FaceTime you?
Yeah.
At the hospital?
Yeah.
And who is she?
2-time Paralympian gold medal winner.
Mm-hmm. What sports did she play?
Snowboards.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of cancer did she have?
The same cancer as me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the day that we found out, we had been in communication with some of the people that she worked with, and we were trying to be able to connect the two of them because we knew she had osteosarcoma as a teenager. And the day that Bridget found out she was going to lose her leg, Brenna Huckabee FaceTimed Bridget, and she told Bridget that no matter what happened, that she was going to be able to do everything and anything as an amputee that she wanted to, and that Brenna was a perfect example of that. She was a swimsuit model, Sports Illustrated first amputee cover model. She was a mom. She was a cancer survivor. She was a Paralympian. She was all of the things that she, you know, she knew you could be if you wanted to do any of those things one day too. And made her stop crying. Made her stop crying. But I'll tell you that one of our hopes too in going to St. Jude, it wasn't our only reason for choosing that path, but was we were really hoping that they'd be able to save Bridget's leg. And Bridget's osteosarcoma tumor was in her distal tibia. But unfortunately, we learned after we arrived at St. Jude, we didn't know this through our scans here locally, but after we arrived, they said that they believed it had crossed her growth plate. And being that as it may, there was no way that they could save her foot. And as a parent, as a mom, all you want to do is take your child to get pedicures, and you want them to be able to wear high heels to the prom, and you want them to look like a normal little girl. And so to hear that she would have an amputation was the most devastating news to me, and it wasn't even me. And I know Bridget was really, really upset about it and sad.
Yeah.
But I don't even think she could process it at the age of 6. Like, I don't think she really understood it. I mean, I didn't understand it, and I won't even disclose my age. But I didn't even understand what it was going to be like, and I didn't know all of the implications of it. But when we knew it wasn't an option to save her leg, I remember sitting in her orthopedic surgeon's office that day, and he's like, so I want to say nonchalant about it, but this was his world. And he's like, I'm telling you that your child is going to be better off for being an amputee than if I try and save her leg. I could go on and on about the stories that happen for trying to save somebody's leg and have so many long-term side effects and problems with the rods that we put in, with vascular issues, drop foot. He's like, you name it. I will tell you that your daughter will be more active and physically active as a result of this amputation. And when we were in his office, Bridget, do you remember being in his office in March of this year?
No. Wait, yes.
Yes. And what did I tell him?
Oh, I forgot.
Was he right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was right. And I certainly didn't believe him all those years ago, but he was right.
Yeah. And that's so good that, you know, he was willing to kind of lay both of those realities out there. Cause like you said, you know, when you're talking about cancer in the bone, I mean, if you're going to remove just the cancer, then the sort of limb salvage process of rebuilding that piece of support structure that's no longer there has a lot of real consequences. And I know that, you know, from some surgeries now there's, you know, you're not allowed to jump and you can't really run. And there's a lot of restrictions that come with that sometimes because the reconstruction may not be able to tolerate it. And so at the end of the day, I'm sure it's an impossible or a very difficult decision to weigh out each of those options because there's pros and cons to both. But it sounds like you had a really amazing doctor who was able to kind of lay out the long-term picture of both of those options. So,
you know, it was, I say it now and I say it every day, I'm so glad I really wasn't given the choice that it had crossed her growth plate, because I probably would have made the wrong decision. I would have chosen to save my daughter's leg because that's what you want to do as a parent. You know, you count their fingers and their toes when they're born, and you want all 10 of them to always remain on her body at all times. So the thought of losing that was really hard for me. So I'm grateful that God did not allow me the choice to make, because I probably would have made the wrong one. So when it came time for her amputation, Bridget, what did we do the night before?
Got my toes painted.
Got your toes painted. And then what did we do? The four of us, mommy and daddy and Brennan.
We had sparkling apples, sparkling cider.
Uh-huh. And what did we cheers to?
No more cancer.
Mm-hmm. No more cancer, because this was the way that we were going to completely remove the cancer from your body, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So to me, it was really hard. I mean, I wouldn't say it was easy, but we chose to look at the positive side, and that this was our day of becoming free of disease. And, you know, I'll never forget her waking up from her surgery the next morning.
I was not. Can you go?
Go ahead.
No.
No, you talk.
No, you talk.
You can talk.
You can talk.
Do you remember waking up?
Yeah.
You do? Tell us.
What was that like, Bridget, when you woke up after the amputation?
I woke up and that's all I remember. I just woke up.
And were you in the hospital bed?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what actually, I do remember when you were coherent in your hospital bed, you looked down past the foot of your bed, and do you remember what was sitting on the shelf?
No.
It was the first prosthetic foot that they actually screw on to the end of your cast to get you up out of bed, and you were heavily drugged.
What do you mean?
You had a lot of anesthesia and medication and pain medication, and you're like, hey, I think they forgot to take my foot.
What?
And you pointed to the foot at the end of the bed. You were kidding. You knew it wasn't your foot, but
wait, what?
You found some humor in the situation from day one, I see.
What? You don't even remember. I know you don't remember. You wouldn't have remembered regardless because you had so much medication in you. But there was your first prosthetic foot that they screwed onto the bottom of your cast. And it was sitting underneath the TV on the other side of your hospital bed. And you're like, hey, mom, look, they forgot to take my foot. Yeah. But I mean, it was funny. But I do say, like, I remember her waking up from her surgery and I couldn't move the sheet. I couldn't bear to see my child.
But my cast was pink and other people have white plain casts.
Ooh, that's lucky. Did you get to pick the color beforehand or was it a surprise?
It was a surprise and then I got to keep picking the color every time I had to get my cast changed.
I think our memories were a little different. Every time you'd wake up from a cast change, you were surprised. Sometimes I guess you did have a say. Everybody else in the hospital had white casts. It was only Bridget, for some reason, Kathy loved you. And she would give you all these colors. She would find, do you remember one of them was tie-dye?
Yeah.
I wanted
rainbow, but she couldn't find rainbow. So she found tie-dye and I still loved it.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good. I've never seen a tie-dye cast. Hopefully I'll never, knock on wood, I don't have to worry about breaking something. But if I do, I'd like a tie-dye cast. So, and you've inspired me.
We'll have to send you a picture of it. It was really cool.
Yeah. I would love that. So Bridget, after, from what you remember, and Jamie, you can jump in on this too, what was the rehab, the physical therapy like right after the surgery? I mean, did they get you up and moving pretty quickly or did they let you hang out in bed for a while? And what was it like? She's shaking her head vigorously. No.
Then, so the day after my amputation, they had the cast, they put something on it, and then the foot would like lock in, so you would be walking the next day.
Mm-hmm. You were up out of the chair the next day, weren't you? Up out of bed, and you walked over to your chair with your crutches, with a catheter in and an epidural in, and you did it. And did you do it every day after that?
Yeah.
They didn't let you rest, did they? No.
You teased that stuff, huh?
So the first day they told her to do 10 leg lifts. How many did you do?
20.
I think you did 30. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh, I'm a little tired. I said, because you're only supposed to do 10.
Go, girl. You know how to get back to being strong. You were ready for it. Was it scary the first time you stood up on it? Was it hard to trust that it was going to hold you up or that it might be painful or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
So something that you can probably appreciate from a physical therapy standpoint is that typically after an amputation, they, you know, put a cast on the leg and the cast typically remains depending, but typically for up to about 4 weeks.
Yeah.
In Bridget's case, they changed her cast. She had an amputation on Monday and her amputation was Friday. And then what did they do? Go ahead.
Every Friday they changed my cast.
Every Friday they changed her cast. So she had cast changed within the first week and then every week after that to push the fluid out and to get her leg to shrink in size. In a typical insurance environment that is not covered by insurance and is not the typical path of an amputation and post-amputation care because unfortunately of insurance, but at St. Jude, they don't have to worry about what insurance says, and they treat the patient and what's best for the patient first and foremost. And so it was amazing that in Bridget's situation, they did that. And so with that cast change, all the way up to 4 weeks post-amputation, she was casted and in her first prosthetic at less than a month and a half after amputation. And that's unheard of. And because of that, she was jogging on a treadmill within 3 months of amputation. And that, again, is unheard of. She wouldn't have even been in her first prosthetic if it was up to our insurance company.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you're bringing up such a good point about sort of insurance-driven care and how if, you know, for those listening that aren't familiar with prosthetics and amputations, you know, the limb really has to be kind of shaped and broadened, you know, the fluid has to be moved out because all this fluid is cooling down there. And in order to get a prosthesis that fits well, that's comfortable, you know, there, it takes time to get there. And then I'm sure you guys have been through the process over the years where that is not a static process. Bridget is growing. Leg size changes, you know, there's lots of things that go into that. So it's not, you know, you cast this like perfectly fit prosthetic socket and then 6 months, a year, maybe less, maybe more, it doesn't really fit anymore. And so there's a lot that goes into that, from socks and liners and different types of things, and then having a good, you know, prosthetist. So when you guys came back to Arizona, who did you guys get on your team as far as, you know, medical professionals, but maybe also just social support to kind of help with the transition back to, you know, getting back to normal life?
I remember one thing that my physical therapy, someone, I think, how did we get?
A friend referred us.
A friend gave us the Impact Physical Therapy. So we've been going there ever since. And then for my prosthetics, since my friend is an amputee who also lives here, and she referred us to this place, the prosthetic place called Hanger.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Yeah, shout out to Impact Physical Therapy up in North Scottsdale, right? And then it sounds like Hanger, which is a pretty widely spread company, they're managing your prosthetic. Is that right, Bridget?
Where did we just come from?
The prosthetic place.
Mm-hmm. Because just as you said, it is nonstop, ongoing process, and we're in the middle of getting a new leg, a completely different system, a new foot. She's continually growing. Her leg is changing shape, and we haven't even talked about some of the unfortunate side effects that come along with cancer treatment and what actually happened after her amputation as well to her residual limb.
Yeah. Do you want to share a little bit about that, either of you?
You don't want to tell her?
No.
We're just like, no, you go ahead. You want to tell them? Did you ride a scooter all the time after amputation, after you started jogging on a treadmill? You rode a scooter all the time, like for fun. And yeah. What happened? You don't want to tell him. So it was the day that she was jogging on the treadmill. She was riding a scooter and she slipped off and fell. And she broke her femur on her residual limb. Unfortunately, it required surgery to put her limb back together and required her to be off of her amputated leg. So now we still had an open wound from amputation. Chemotherapy causes a lot of wound healing issues. And now we have a cast over an unhealed wound and also inability to walk and still taking chemotherapy that causes osteopenia typically. Mm-hmm. So time went on. Her leg healed after 6 weeks and she was able to put her prosthetic back on. So she had to relearn to walk now for the second time after amputation. The wound issue got worse. And so that was probably in about end of September, early October, nearing the end of her chemotherapy treatments. But we had a wound that never healed. After she finished treatment, she was on and off again of that prosthetic until they opened her wound back up completely. They had a lot of debriding, but it just wouldn't heal. And then they completely opened it, closed it back up. Again, she was off of her leg for about another 6 weeks. Then back on her leg and was just walking in our house, slipped and fell and broke her femur at a 90-degree break.
Oh
and required surgery again, this time with titanium nails because her bones were so soft from lack of weight-bearing chemo and chemotherapy that she then had to relearn to walk for the third time. That took almost a full year to really relearn to walk. And in April of 2020, she taught herself to run during quarantine after relearning to walk three times. So it was a very, very long process. And unfortunately, so many side effects and issues that came along with not just her cancer diagnosis or amputation, but the side effects that came from it. And I can't say enough about Impact Physical Therapy and what they've done for Bridget. And then some of the therapies that we've also learned about at St. Jude that Impact, we went to another location, Foothills Physical Therapy here, that started treating Bridget with blood flow resistance therapy, BFR. And then Impact went through the training so that they could offer her what she needed, because we were trying to go to two different locations while she was in school, and it was so hard. But that literally changed her outcome, was the blood flow resistance therapy. Unbelievable, game changer, yeah, by far. So yeah, so there were a lot of barriers for Bridget to overcome, and we're still working through that. I mean, she still has muscle weakness. I mean, for a year of not being able to walk, she lost every muscle, and through the glute, hip, hamstring, quad, everything of that leg. So it's taking her a really long time to recover from that last femur break.
Yeah. And I see that you do some cryotherapy too. Is that right?
We were there today too, weren't we?
What do you use it for, Bridget?
Tell her.
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay. When did we start taking you? I'll tell you. When did we start taking you? After your second femur break. Tell her.
After my second femur break.
Uh-huh. And a lot with swelling and things like that.
How many days until we could see your knee again? Say it.
Five.
Only 5 days. That's really impressive.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I had already been going myself just for personal reasons, just for overall health. And when she broke her femur for the second time, the swelling was unbelievable from the surgeries and things like that. And so we went 5 days in a row, and we went from not being able to see her knee to being able to see her knee, just because it penetrates so much deeper. And then when did you start going into the chamber? Do you remember? Mm-mm. Probably, let's see. When did you go? How many months has it been? I think it's been a few months that she started actually going into the full chamber with me now. And how do I get you in there?
By bribing me.
Girl, someone would have to bribe me to get in there too. So I understand. I'm not a cold temperature fan. So you are, I think you might be the strongest young woman I've ever met, from all you've been through and getting into the cryotherapy chamber. It's very, very impressive.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, and I started doing that with her because I read a study through Johns Hopkins University that looked at children who had metastasized osteosarcoma. And by putting them in the chamber without chemotherapy, their tumors in their lungs shrunk. And that was without chemotherapy. It was literally just from the cryotherapy chamber. So I thought, well, if Bridget can go in there as a healthy person, we would do anything and everything to assure that her cancer wouldn't come back. And this was a tool we could use.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So we use it obviously for that, but she's been going through a lot of prosthetic issues because of the growing and the changing. Also her tibia is extremely prominent in her residual limb. And she's had a pin lock system, which the pin gets irritates the bottom of her tibia. We've had massive bruising, and so every day we'll go and do the local treatment on the bottom of her leg, and she's able to at least run for the next day until it bruises again.
Yeah. So what I hear you guys saying is that this is an ongoing process. It's not a one time get the prosthesis and off you go. It's, you know, it's going to continue to take the help of a team and the dedication that you guys have, just to try to maintain it so Bridget can have the best quality of life that she wants to have. So Bridget, with all that you've been through, what are some of the sports and activities you're doing right now?
I play basketball, golf, and swim.
Basketball, golf, and swim. That's awesome. How do you feel running on your prosthetic leg?
It's comfortable and fine.
Yeah, you've gotten the hang of it.
You have a blade now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make it better?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You want to show her?
Yeah.
These are very cool. Oh, look at that. I bet that's much easier than running on the regular foot. Sorta.
Not really.
Not really. About the same.
She likes the foot.
Do you like the foot a little bit better? Well, I mean, you're the one that has to wear it, right? So you would know. You're the expert on it. Well, it's awesome to see some of the videos of you running and jumping over things at physical therapy and balancing on everything. I've seen a couple before and after just from a year ago. And man, you've really gotten good at it. So all your hard work is paying off. So I just have a couple more questions for you guys and then I'll let you get on with your evening. So Jamie, this one's for you. I mean, it obviously sounds like Bridget received exceptional care both at St. Jude's and then also since coming back here to Arizona. But is there anything that you can share kind of looking back through the years that maybe that you found really helpful in navigating the healthcare system, but also maybe something that was a barrier or a frustration that, you know, myself and others can learn from that we can maybe do better in the future?
You know, I think I was so blessed, number one, that I had a friend who had unfortunately navigated the pediatric cancer world and was able to help me along. Not everybody has that person or that friend that can help them, and it's scary. Number two, if it is a pediatric cancer, St. Jude obviously was where we turned, but they have free resources to anyone going through a pediatric cancer diagnosis with information that is easily accessible. They have a network of all the information about pediatric cancers that can help anyone that's going through it. And it's, like I said, it's free. So that in itself, just knowing that that's there, I think is helpful to anybody that's trying to navigate these waters. The other thing that I've unfortunately had to learn is that regardless of having somebody there to help you along, that as hard as it is, that you will always have to be your child's advocate, whether it's in a newly diagnosed situation or we are now 3+ years post-diagnosis, and I am her advocate every single day when it comes to her follow-up scans and care, to her physical therapy, to alternative naturopathic treatments. I'm constantly researching them and looking for them. And then as a follow-up, I'm also dealing with some of the side effects of chemotherapy, processing issues, and things that relate to school. I now have to follow up with her IEP and have had to become an expert in dealing with the education system and becoming her advocate there. It has been much more than I would have ever imagined with just the simple words of your child has cancer. It has become a complete world that'll never end for me. And so as hard as it is in the beginning, I would say, look for somebody that can help guide you along the way, because even though there are medical teams and people that are going to help you and do everything that they can, you have to be your child or yourself or your partners or whomever that you are helping along with a diagnosis. You are their advocate, and there will be nobody that can fill that shoe along the way. And it's not easy, but it's something that you will have to continue to work through for years to come. And as far as I'm concerned, it'll be until the day I die that I will be Bridget's advocate and I will be there every step of the way with her.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such an important thing to share and to learn. And I think something that those of us who haven't been in your shoes maybe wouldn't even consider, how, like you said, it's, you know, when you hear those words, cancer free, it doesn't end there, you know, it continues on and on. And, I think that as healthcare providers, we can always do a better job in maybe foreseeing some of these things. And at the very least, trying to help someone see down the path, the things that are coming and point them in the right direction. So I really appreciate you being honest and sharing that, because I know it can help so many other people, just to maybe be a little bit more prepared for it and not to be surprised by it. So Bridget, I have two last questions for you and then I'll let you guys go. So tell me, what do your physical therapists do really well to support you and encourage you that maybe I can learn from if I were going to work with someone like you?
They play really, really fun games. And they, encourage me to do it.
Mm-hmm. They tell you how strong you are. Yeah. They encourage you and they always make it fun. You know, one of the beauties in sharing her Instagram is sharing a lot of her physical therapy work. And I can't tell you how many messages we get saying how lucky Bridget is with the physical therapy team that she has. She's so blessed. They do the most amazing work and they deal with some drama sometimes, don't they, Bridge?
No.
No? Okay.
Well, that's such so good to hear, because that's something I think that we can all learn from. Play a lot of games, have a lot of fun, be encouraging and supporting. I think that we as physical therapists always need to keep that at the forefront, because we want to be helpful and we have all this knowledge, but the most important thing is that you want to keep coming back and that we are all working together to help get our patients better. So my last question for you is, if we're looking forward to the future, so you are just about to be 10 years old. So, you know, you've been through so much since you were 6 years old, more than, you know, most kids will go through ever in their lifetime. So is there anything that you've learned through this process that you would like to share with other kids who might be facing this challenge?
Everything's going to be okay. And you've got this.
Yeah, that's good.
That is really well said. Everything is going to be okay. And you've got this. Well, thank you guys so much. And before I let you go, if someone wants to learn more about St. Jude's Research Hospital, where can they go?
stjude.org, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we always share Bridget's journey. You can see some of the care that she has received and all of our journeys as we follow up, because all our scans are still done there. So you can follow along with Bridget at on Instagram, BridgetStrong1, the number one. And we'd love to share Bridget's journey with you and how St. Jude continues to assure that Bridget has the best care and remains as healthy as possible.
That's great. Thank you. And I will link to those in the show notes. If you're listening and you want to find them, you can find them there. Well, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate your time and your sharing everything. And I can't wait to just see you grow and continue on through your Instagram page. And I hope you guys really just enjoy the rest of your weekends and your summer and your upcoming 10th birthday party.
What do you say?
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Of course. Thank you so much.